Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Ham Nation episode 53 for June 19th, 2012, the night before field day. Greetings, everyone, and welcome to another exciting episode of Ham Nation, number 53 this week. And this is a show where we talk about amateur radio and related topics. It's good to be back one more time. You may notice that the walls are kind of bare behind me here. I am in the middle of packing up this shop so it can be moved to the backyard, and I'll have another one in here next week, but I've got to do the wiring, do the paneling, insulation, and everything. So I'm going to be shackless here for the next few weeks. I've already taken the HF radio down. The VHF and UHF radios are still up, but they'll go down tonight after the show. So I'm going to be incommunicado here, I believe, for at least another week or two. And I guess I'll just have to stick with Echo Link on the iPhone. What about that, Gordon? Will that work?
Wow. Echo Link on the iPhone. I don't know. Nothing beats seeing you live and direct, George. I don't know. What do you think, Julian? Is he going to be as good on Echo Link?
Probably not as good, but he and I can do it both Echo Link on our phones.
Oh,
so be good.
Man. You folks are too much. Well, I'll echo George. Welcome, everyone, to Ham Nation. And tonight is our field day night. And before we get started, remember, AmericanRadioRelayLeague.org/field-day-locator. That's where you'll find, whether you're a ham or not, a field day location close to you. So, George, back to you.
Okay, Gordo. Yeah, we've got a lot to talk about tonight with field day. We've got a few videos to show you here from some of our various hosts. I've even got one coming up here in a minute on some things that Jim and Tommy and I did last year, and that'll be a lot of fun. We've also got our good friend Don Wilbanks with us tonight. Good evening, Don.
George, Gordon, Julian, hey guys, greetings from South Mississippi. Yeah, the Echo Link works really well on the iPhone. I enjoy that quite often, as a matter of fact, and I have a lot of fun with that. And also the do drop in thing. Well, that's Echo Link. There was something else I was thinking of for the iPhone, but a lot of ham radio apps for the iPhone and the iPad and the Android devices that all work really, really well. Yeah, I've got a video tonight as well talking about my bug out bag that we showed last week briefly. The little antenna had a lot of emails about that. So I got the iPad out and I made myself a little video, and we're going to have that on here tonight, George.
Oh, great, Don. That's going to be fun to see. I don't have a bug out bag per se myself. I just got a lot of boxes with stuff in them here, and I would just have to grab it all and throw it in the truck if I had to go. Well, Gordo has got his infamous short shorts, or do you call that something else, Gordo?
7 second short shots. Say that fast 4 times. And before we do, I want to introduce you, and many of you have already seen them. They are the band pass filters that are essential during field day. These filters will have a sharp roll-off out of each band edge. So if you're on 40 meters or 15 meters or you're on 80 meters, you're not going to hear the other band. Now, these are not sharp enough to cut out a CW operator if you're at the top of the band and they're at the bottom of the band. But these filters from Industrial Communications Engineering, ICE, these filters do a fabulous job of keeping the 10 meter out of the 20 and the 20 out of the 40 and the 15 out of the 75. So hopefully you will all bring your band pass filters. And if we could, let's Let's roll the short shots, and I'll show you a couple more things to think about before field day gets started. So the Gordo short shots. Good to have a voltmeter, and you want to see it about 14 volts. That's a tad high, but a good analog voltmeter, easy to see in the bright sunlight. So have a voltmeter. This is the antenna impedance matcher from MFJ. Occasionally, you'll find that you've got a dipole that just doesn't seem to drop all the way down to 50 ohms. This matcher will make it happen. Good for mobiles. Good ground connection. Always want to go wide on your ground. This is copper foil to the back of. It looks like an ICOM 735. This is how we will ground at field day to keep the RF from getting inside the radio. And of course, the MFJ SWR analyzer. But at field day, don't be surprised if all of a sudden it goes nuts when another station nearby is transmitting. So make sure no one's transmitting when you're checking your analyzer. And of course, a Bird 43 watt meter. Bring those right slugs. This is pretty much immune to other signal RF. So this will always work well at field day. And kids are our future in ham radio, so do everything you can to get kids to show up, and you can operate as a GOTA station, a great way to get more kids involved. And good signage, have those signs up so folks driving by will stop in and go, whoa, what's this about ham radio? Hopefully you've got many of the ARRL pieces to hand out as PR for ham radio. There's a good headset, and headsets are essential for field day, but I caution you, don't take an amplified speaker because other stations nearby will get into the speaker and drive you nuts. But a good headset, this happens to be a Heil headset, is going to be a great way to hear those signals. And of course, there's a Gordo fast ditch bag. That's a battery behind that big meter. Problem with a radio, it's a great radio, but a little hard to see because of the trans-reflective color screen. But nonetheless, drag out those radios you don't use much in the field, because field day is your opportunity to see how they're working. And of course, a field strength meter is a great way to see what's going on and see all the activity off of your new antenna. We'll be on a new 6-meter Innova antenna for field day, 7 elements, 30-foot boom. Stay away from power lines. Those two top lines are bare wires. There's nothing covering them. And so be very careful and always have a safety person on hand at field day to make sure that you're going to stay safe around power lines. And here we are. Notice there's no power lines. That's the van ready to put some antennas on it. So we hope all of you will have a good, safe field day. And we look forward to hearing you on the air. And, oh yeah, don't forget solar. Who's ever got the biggest solar panel is going to be the winner. And good shade and lots of sunblock this weekend. It's going to be sunny all over the country for field day. And of course, there's the old Gordo 76 wagon. Got all my radios packed up, ready to roll. We can operate right out of the back. Field day, your opportunity to stretch your stuff and put all your radios in gear and have a great time. And that's Don, KE6BXT, Mr. ATV. That's what you see behind me, the ATV monitor. He says, get on the air with amateur television and take part in doing videos on the air live during field day. Thanks, Don. Thanks for showing up at Dayton. And that was it, the 7-second short shots. Getting you ready for field day. So let's go back to net control. And I think, George, it's over to you. And thanks for watching.
Well, that was some great shots, Gordo, and some really important tips in there, especially stay away from those power lines. You can't overemphasize that. And I noticed you had some tents there but didn't mention them. Down here, we definitely want some kind of canopy to get under. And we usually carry some fans, too, because it gets very hot. I did have one question for you, though. I noticed you showed some copper foil there. Where do you find that these days?
The copper foil, you can get the real thin stuff that Julian's going to bring me. This comes at, it's copper clad, comes at the hardware stores. It's about an inch, not quite an inch. So it's pretty good. But the wide copper foil, you can buy it through Ham Radio Outlet in 25 and 50 foot sections. Also Amateur Electronic Supply. And probably a lot of the other radio dealers have the wide copper foil, which is really helpful. And thanks, Alex, for bringing up that photo for good grounding with a low reactance ground wire. And chat room says there's no more ice filters. There was a death in the ice filter family, and we're really sorry to hear about that. But even a manual antenna tuner tuned to resonance can help mitigate some of the problems on an alternate band. George, back to you.
Okay, well, that's good tips to know there. I had not thought about that copper strap. You probably found that at the hardware store, so I'll have to look for some of that, but I like the wide stuff myself. That's really good stuff, and it works a lot better than trying to use braid or just wire. They don't work as good as a wider strap. Well, you got me excited about Field Day, Gordo, so I brought up a little video here that Tommy and my friend Jim, you remember my friend Jim, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. We sure do. So I can't wait to see it. Sorry, I was leaning over, plugging something in. Go ahead, George.
Well, we went out and did Field Day last year and went way out in the woods, away from everything, way off the grid, and set up out there and had a big time. But here's the method that we use to get our antennas up in the trees.
Jim's got the potato okay. shooter here and his special... Special fuel
is Aquanet. Use this for all your potato gun needs. Or today it's actually an apple gun because an apple core has a little more weight to it, and it
this will not end well.
Seals just as good. So
I wonder who's going to be first.
We're waiting on somebody now to hold the spinning reel.
I won't pay no attention.
Yeah, come here, Tim or Tommy, either one. Grab that spinner reel.
Which one you want, the small one or the big one?
Big one.
And point it straight the way I point this.
You ain't going to do me like I did my son and hit me in the eye with a fishing line.
I hope not.
Okay, the rocket's been fueled. There's his igniter right there.
Yeah. Watch out, Bill. You don't want applesauce all over you.
About that middle pine or the far one?
The middle one or the first one, either one. Whichever one you can hit.
Did you push the button?
All right. Here we go. On the count of three. Yeah, make sure the button's pushed. This one. Two. Three.
Wow.
Oh, man. She has money. That happens sometimes. Nice. All right. Shot number two coming up.
Lock and load, huh?
This is great. I thought I was redneck.
12:25. All right. We got 35 minutes to finish, y'all.
All right. Push the button.
Cameraman's running.
Let's go for a second, Tim. We got to go underneath this wire here.
Ready. I will, so I untie it in three.
All right, it's on
fire. Two. One. Much more success.
Did you see how far I cast that apple with this fishing pole?
I see that apple pole in the sky. This will do it. You know, ready? Ready. That's a good clean shot there.
You took all the line, man.
That's I just hung.
You run
real good.
That's
all right. It made it over the top.
It
didn't come down through the rim.
So far, we've got up an 80-meter dipole, and then we've got up a multi-band vertical.
I'm still fishing.
Tommy hadn't caught anything yet.
It might chew up in here.
Three dead birds.
Stick fish.
Uh-oh, good shot, good shot.
Oop. Bad ammo.
I did catch an apple.
Anyway, we've been having a good time getting things set up. Here is the tent now. We got two stations in here. Actually, we got three stations. I take that back. But 80 meters, it's a little early in the day for it yet. We don't have a 40-meter antenna, and that's what we're trying to do right now. So hopefully we'll get on the air and make a few more contacts here shortly. Well, we had a big time there, as you can see. When you're with Jim, you know there's going to be some kind of fuel or propellant involved somewhere.
Maybe.
Julian's got a, yeah. Julian's got another great field day tip for us here. I learned something when I watched this video. So, Julian, want to say anything about it before we start?
Yeah, absolutely. Just thinking that maybe you could put some C4 in that cannon and it'd go a little bit better. What do you think? Okay.
Moon bounce.
Basically, yeah, exactly. So anyway, I shot a little video the other day just about some coiling of some coax, because as you'll see on the video, there's one thing I really hate, and that's messy cables. So go ahead, roll it, Alex.
I'm Julian Frost, N3JF, and something that really annoys me is tangled up messy cables. It doesn't matter if it's the long microphone cable that I often use while shooting videos for Ham Nation, extension cords, or long coax cable runs used for field day. Having to waste time unraveling cables sucks. Most of the time when we're coiling coax, we do it the standard overhand method, which is just creating one loop on top of the other. I call this the overhand method. Okay? It works really well, except that after a while, the weight of the coax makes it very hard to work out this twist that we're putting into the coils. So you have to work to get rid of this twist so you can keep coiling it. And of course, since we're putting twist in it, we can't leave the other end attached to the antenna because it'll put a twist on the antenna coax connector. So as we coil this, it gets harder and harder. And as you get closer, you can see you're starting to twist up your coax. There has to be a better method, and there is. I've now switched to what I call the over-under method. You start off by making an overhand loop, just as you normally would do, and then you grab another length of coax and you twist it so that your hand comes underneath the loop, like that. Then you go over again, like you normally would, and grab another one and come underneath by twisting it, like so. You just keep doing this. As you see, it's very easy to coil this coax because I'm not putting any twist into it. The overhand loop twists it, the underhand loop untwists it. As long as you keep going over, under, over, under, and keep going all the way to the end of your coax, you won't put any twist in the coax. You can even leave it attached to the antenna connector at the other end because you're not putting any twist in the coax.
This is the test.
So that's how I coil my microphone cables when I'm shooting video and my coax cables when I need an antenna run. I hope this will help take out some of the frustration you may have this coming field day. So for Ham Nation 73, I'm Julian, N3JF.
I've been using that method for years and years on microphone cables for remote broadcasts for radio. You just take the thing and hold it and just throw it out, and whoosh, you go straight out, and it's straight, and you're ready to plug your microphones in. It works great. It's a great method. Thanks for sharing that.
Yeah, great stuff, Julian. I had never done that way before myself, and as many cables as I've twisted over the years, it sure would have made life a lot easier. Don, I believe you had a video for us on field day as well, don't you?
Yeah, we do. And yeah, that's a great method. A broadcast engineer showed me that about 15 or 20 years ago, and it's the best for doing your cables. Go over, under, and you'll never have a twist. All right. So last week, we were talking about field day, and I dug out the little green bag with my Yaesu FT817, and I showed the little antenna. I got, I don't know, 5 or 6 emails on that, so I thought, I'll just shoot a video, and here it is.
Hey, Don, can we go over to Gordon's emails first and stretch some
time? We can
time?
Do that.
Sure.
Absolutely.
And we'll go back to your video right when we have it in a minute.
That'll work.
Okay.
Okay. Gordon?
Okay. We have a lot of emails. And what we wanted to say was we're looking for more great ideas and more videos. Julian says he's happy to look at those videos that you may want to send. 3 to 5 minutes in length would be great that we can use here on Ham Nation. But this is your show. So we're hoping that all of you will take a moment to let us know what you'd like to see and describe some of the activities you'd like to see on video. And for those of you listening to us but not viewing us, we have that very much in mind. Many of you have written in saying, we're listeners only, so don't forget us when you're describing something that you're looking at on the video side. So you've got it. Now, most important, this coming weekend is Field Day, and we've had several folks in the chat room say, where can we get that information about where our local field day is going to be for non-hams to come visit? ARRL.org/field-day-locator. And you drop in your zip code and you'll see some great field day sites and invitations. And we hope all of you will have a great field day. So on the chat room, we're monitoring it right now, but most important, be sure and write us. And you can write Gordo, WB6NOA at ARRL.net. And we hope that all of you will input to this show, because this is your show. We hope to be operating with a real loud signal on 10 meters, about 28.500. We're going to be on 6 meters with a new Innova antenna from overseas. It's 30 feet long, 7 elements. It's a big mama. We're going to be up at 50.125. And what we do and what we recommend is all of you don't hog the calling frequency, but rather come down to the calling frequency, announce your call sign, and then say you're listening up 10 or 20 or 30 kilohertz. And that's what we'll do on 6 meters, as well as at 28,400, as well as 6 meters at 50.125. We'll say WB6NOA or Whiskey 6 Whiskey Charlie listening up 20 kilohertz, and we'll give the frequency. So listen for the announcements and follow us up and say that you're a Ham Nation viewer or listener. Okay, Don, back to you.
Very good. Yeah, I hope to be doing Field Day this year as well. It's been many years since way before Katrina that I've done Field Day, and hopefully planning on doing some with the Westside Amateur Radio Club in New Orleans, on the West Bank of New Orleans. And by the way, they're going to be celebrating their 60th anniversary, July 1st, 60 years. So very good. I was president of that club a couple of times, and my God, they're still here. Figure that out. All right, Alex, if we're ready, why don't we go ahead and go to the video of me and my bug out bag and the little antenna that we had last week featured. So if we have that, go ahead and roll it.
Hey, everybody, AE5DW and my son Tyler. It is Father's Day weekend. We've got my wife Dawn behind the camera, so we're having a little family outing here. Father's Day weekend, and of course, Field Day is this coming weekend, so I thought I would show you the FT817 Field Day portable bug out rig that I use. I showed you this antenna last week on Ham Nation and got a lot of emails, so I thought, well, let's just bring the thing out and show you what we're working with. So we'll run the still pictures here now, and I'll show you exactly what we're working with. So here is the bug out bag, the little green bag that went with me to Arkansas for Hurricane Katrina. And very small, you open it up, and there you see the FT817 and everything that's inside. And it is a company called Super Antenna. It's the Super Antenna MP1 Portable Vertical, and it covers all bands, 440, 2 meter, and all the way through 75 meters if you get the accessory coil. Now here you see the Super Antenna itself. There are two extensions. There's the coil itself. There's an extendable whip on top. There's the big hank of wire for the ground system. The red thing you see is the 80-meter coil, and then there is a bracket with a C-clamp that you can clamp it to to a railing or whatever. Now, on the side of the radio is an accessory clamp that I have mine mounted to, and just a little hank of coax, and right there it is. And here is what the whole thing looks like, just sitting here on the redneck table, and it works really, really well. Okay, so now we've shown you the pictures of the antenna. Let me show you exactly how this works. I'm not going to go through the whole procedure because your radio may be different, but on the 817 and on the 706 and the 703 and the 7000, any of these small portable radios, you have an SWR meter function built in here. So what you can do is, this is just like a screwdriver antenna, except that it's manual. So you got a little plastic set screw over here. You undo the set screw, okay, and you can move it slowly up and down for max noise. You tune for maximum noise, maximum static. When you hear that, you just kind of lock it down, and then you go over to your SWR function on the radio and go to AM or FM or something like that and from a carrier, and then you fine-tune it that way. Okay? Now, what's very, very important is a good ground, of course. I've got my ground radios laid out. I've got wires, got one going that way, about 15, 20 feet, one going that way, 15, 20 feet, one going that way, 15, 20 feet. Now, the last portable operation that we showed you here on Ham Nation was from Hawaii. And as you saw, the Pacific Ocean makes a really, really nice ground, doesn't it, son?
Yeah.
Really nice ground.
We're in the Pacific Ocean.
We're not near the Pacific Ocean. That's right. We're in Mississippi. Now, Mississippi has an ocean, the Gulf of Mexico, and it's got a lot of salt in it, but we're 60 miles to the north.
So we can't go there.
We can't go there. Now, I'm not Gordon. He's not Julian.
I'm not.
This ain't Hawaii, and that ain't the Pacific Ocean.
It's a pond.
It's a pond. But you know what?
That's what best we got.
Redneck Mississippi?
This is how we do it.
That's how we do it. Let's fire this thing up and see if we hear anything.
We're in good tune.
We're on 20. Let's tune around.
It sounds like something from a cartoon a little bit.
We heard somebody here earlier a little bit.
No, we were talking about the frequencies. Like how you're tuning it around.
You're tuning around?
Yeah, it sounds like something from a cartoon.
Okay, well. Man appears to be a little dead. But it does work. And even with 5 watts, you can make contacts. And a good thing about this radio, this particular radio, because it is 2 meter 440 and all of HF, this antenna will cover all of those. So this makes for a great bug out radio if you've got to go out and evacuate from, in our case, a hurricane. We did the same. This station went with me for Katrina up to Arkansas, and I was able to keep in touch and listen. Now, band's kind of dead. We're just sitting here. What do you say you reach over and grab that Gordon West book, maybe do a little studying, and why don't you, since it's Father's Day, see if you got something for your old dad there in that bag. What do we got here?
Oh, a beer. Can I have it?
No.
Can I have it?
We can have this. Oh, look. That's
a DVD.
There you go. Why don't you crack that open? I'll crack this open. And,
I got this book from what my dad gave me, this from Gordon West.
Gordon West, look at that. He signed it and everything. You can't read it because, you know, Gordon writes funny, but...
Yeah, true. I mean, come on.
All right, you get to reading.
Okay.
I'll get to working on this. And, George, why don't you pick it up, all right?
Okay, Don. Boy, that was great. That was a lot of fun. And one thing I would add to that, I don't know if you mentioned it, but... when you're keying up the mic to check SWR, I don't think I would be touching that little set screw on the side of the antenna.
No, you can't. No, it will detune it, but you move it and see where it is, and then go up and down a coil and hit it again, and go up and down a coil and hit it again until you get the SWR zeroed in just right, and then lock it down, and then you're ready to operate. Now, as soon as you get your hand near it, it's going to completely detune it, but that's a good tip. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's a good point. I was thinking more about RF burns, but maybe not at
that.
Well,
with 5 watts, not with the 817, with only 5 watts. Now, if you've got an ICOM 7000 or a 706 and you're running 100 watts on 40 or 20, then yeah, you could get an RF burn. But on 5 with that 817, you're not going to get burned, I don't think.
Okay. Well, as long as we got you here, what about Newsline tonight? Is it live or Memorex?
It is live tonight, Georgie Porgy. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1818, here are your Ham Nation headlines for today, Tuesday, June 19th, 2012. Amateur radio emergency operators in Colorado and New Mexico are still on standby alert, and a number are still involved in coordinated relief efforts as wildfires rage across the mainly wilderness areas of both states. In Colorado, the best information came last Tuesday night, the 12th, from our very own Amanda Alden, K1DDN. Amanda and her husband Jeff, K0JSC, live in Carson City, Colorado. And she reported here on Ham Nation that hams further north in the Fort Collins area are very much involved in providing various types of communications, with APRS markers for the fire areas being one of the major resources. Moving south into New Mexico, Jay Miller, W5WHN in Albuquerque, has been monitoring the work of the hams involved in the Little Bear fire that erupted Saturday the 9th. He tells Amateur Radio Newsline that Joe Kenmore, K5FBK, was in the Lincoln County EOC when the blaze was first discovered. And as this newscast was prepared, Gerald Miner, N5RKE, was at the shelter in Ruidosa, and Ed Meyer, WK7ED, is active at the shelter in Capitan. And as we go to air, there's not been any mass call out of hams in either state, and hams involved in emergency communications groups were told on the 13th not to self-deploy, but the word is, have your go kit ready and be ready to provide assistance as is needed. South Africa AMSAT reports that the satellite batteries on Sumandilasat have failed, and that means that the satellite is only active when the solar panels are illuminated. The report from SA AMSAT says that the satellite recovery team at Sunspace is still incrementally reading back the program code from the 9 power modules, this in an effort to determine the extent of the problem. But with Sumandilasat going through eclipses, the satellite is not available for as long each day as the team would like. And the worldwide online repeater directory known as RFinder now supports D-Star. This is a direct result of the editorial staff attending the D-Star Forum at the recent Dayton Hamvention. According to a press release by the publication, it became apparent that there was a lack of D-Star repeater locating options in the vastly growing population of D-Star user base. And as a result, as of May 24th, RFinder now fully supports D-Star in the directory. You can find RFinder in the Apple App Store and the Android market for your iDevices and your Android devices, and the web version can be found at www.rfinder.net. And as we've been talking about all night, the annual ARRL Field Day takes place each year on the fourth weekend of June. That is this weekend. Starts at 1800 UTC Saturday, June 23rd, runs through 2100 UTC Sunday, June 24th. And while it's billed as an emergency preparedness exercise, it's also a great chance for you to tell the world about your hobby and the service it provides to the community. Alan Pitts, WNAGP, is the manager of media and public relations for the ARRL, and he says it's also a chance for us to show off the various legislators and government agencies and remind them that we're here and we need the spectrum. We provide emergency services, and most of all, we have a lot of fun doing it. Again, Field Day is this weekend. We hope to hear you on the air. And that'll do it from Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for nearly 35 years at www.arnewsline.org. Don Wilbanks, AE5-W73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. George?
Great job as always, Don, and a lot of good topics on there this week. And we've got Amanda out in Colorado with us. I hope she's with us. Amanda, how are things going out there?
Good, George. Unlike what news is saying, we are not all on fire here in Colorado. We're doing pretty good. Thanks.
Well, that's great. We were kind of concerned when we saw the news reports in the last day or two here. Looks like it's getting close to you.
There is a fire, and I always get this wrong, so if I mess it up, you guys, I'm really sorry, but from the crows, as the crow flies, okay, I got it, as the crow flies, the nearest fire is about 40 miles away from us, and I do have some steels here, some more APRS shots, and there's the first one, and well, actually, this is from the Teller County emergency response team. They're showing you where the fire is and how much it has consumed. Now, it says 1,100 acres, and that sounds so bad to all of us. And the next fire is, there we go, the High Park Fire. And that has consumed 59,500 acres. And it's about 50% contained. By the way, the other fire is only about 20% contained. Now, just to let you guys know, anybody thinking of coming to Colorado, Colorado consists of almost 67 million acres. 67 million acres. So 50,000 out of that 67 million acres is not that bad. So don't be worried to come to Colorado. And by the way, on that last steel shot where I had black arrows there, thank you, you guys, those are where they've actually saved homes. So you wonder why the fire hasn't consumed those little canyons, things like that. That's where they're actually saving a whole lot of homes. So God bless those firefighters out there. They're doing a really good job. Now, I tried to get a hold of some of the ARES members helping out in communications, and they're so darn busy that they don't have a chance to talk to me yet. So maybe I can report on that next week about what they have been doing for communications. Now, the next shot is our APRS map. And this goes to show you where they have put markers for the American Red Cross shelter, which is super fantastic for anybody that's traveling through there that uses APRS. They'll know exactly where to stay away from and also where the fire has been going at this time. So the hams here locally have been doing a great job putting those markers on the APRS map. And a big thanks to some of the hams like In Zero DRC, that's Dustin and Pueblo. And I know there was AC Zero PW, I believe. And if I get your call sign wrong, I really, really apologize about that. Anyhow, come to Colorado. We're ready for field day here, as you can tell. You have to have a nifty hat. If you don't have a nifty hat, no one will stop and ask you what you're doing on field day. Isn't that correct, everybody? So, and one more thing, if I could invent bug spray, sunscreen, and deodorant all in one spray, I would be a millionaire. I'm going for it, you guys. I'm going for
it. Absolutely.
I'm telling you right now. And so come to Colorado. Because that's how, you know, my parents and I make a living by doing printing for tourists and things like that. So we're not all under smoke here, although we do see some haze occasionally. Just leave the charcoal and the open fires at home. Other than that, we're doing great here. So looking forward to field day, getting down the CQ field day. And what the station that we are, we're a 2A CO, 2A Charlie Oscar, 2A Charlie Oscar. Just get that in your mind, and you guys will start dreaming about this for 4 days after field day. I know you will. You'll still have nightmares and hearing PSK and CW in your head as you're trying to sleep. So I know I will be. Anyhow, you guys, I look forward to working you all on field day, and I say 73. And Hamtails, we'll be getting back to that as soon as this whole whirlwind of everything else drops off. So probably around 4th of July, I'm going to start sharing all of your guys' tales again. So make sure you keep sending me those stories at hamtails@live.com. That's H-A-M-T-A-I-L-S at live.com, okay? Thanks, you guys. You guys have a good weekend.
Thanks, Amanda. And that is a nice field day get-up you've got there. I really like the hat. You manage to have something pink on there every week. How do you do it?
That's my signature. I've got to have the pink. Even if I'm on an Aries call and I have to help people and I've got the HT and I have the ugly, god-awful, reflective chartreuse vest on, I'm going to have something pink on so everybody knows who I am and they never forget who I am.
Oh, great. We look forward to seeing you next week, and maybe we'll catch you over the weekend on field day. Last week on Smoke and Solder, we had a couple of guest videos in there because we were had a jam-packed show. We didn't get to this one that I had produced, so my video this week is not related to field day, but it's something we all need to know about. So, Alex, if you've got the video there, let's look at resistors. This week on Smoke and Solder, we're going to go back to basics and talk about resistors.
Resistance is futile.
Resistors are electrical components that restrict the flow of current. The unit of resistance is given the name ohm in honor of the physicist and mathematician George Simon Ohm. Ohm is probably most famous for the law that bears his name, Ohm's law. Current equals voltage divided by resistance. The symbol of the ohm is the Greek letter omega. Schematic symbols for the resistor in the U.S. and Japan are a series of zigzag lines. In Europe, it's a rectangle with a line coming out either end. One way to explain resistance is with a water pipe. Think of the water pipe as a wire with no resistance. The water flows through it unimpeded. Now, let's add resistance by pinching the pipe in the middle. The water flow is reduced because it is restricted by the resistance. There are many different types of resistors. There are the old-school carbon composition resistors, carbon film resistors. There are a variety of wire-wound resistors on different coil forms and shapes. Power resistors have a heat sink around them to increase their power rating. And network or SIP resistors contain many resistors in one package. There are tiny surface mount chip resistors and many more types. Carbon composition resistors contain a rod of carbon inside. Carbon film resistors have a film of carbon wrapped around a ceramic or insulating rod. These are often preferred in some circuits because they have lower noise. Wire wound resistors are usually made of nichrome wire wrapped around an insulator. These resistors often will handle more current. However, they do have some inductance, so they're not useful in some circuits. The color bands on a resistor identifies its value. This chart shows the meaning. The first band of color is the first digit. The second band is the second digit. The third band is the multiplier. And the fourth band is the allowable tolerance for the marked value. There are several types of variable resistors. Here is a wire wound resistor with a variable center tap. A potentiometer, often called a pot, is usually made of a carbon or wire resistive element with a wiper that slides up and down its length. The schematic symbol for a pot is a resistor with a third tap in the middle, which has an arrow on it. A rheostat is like a pot, but it only has one end connection and a wiper. The value of several resistors connected in series is determined by adding their values together. I'm going to use the simple circuit simulator available at echalk.co.uk to illustrate how resistor combinations behave in circuits. The first circuit we're going to look at contains three 100-ohm resistors. To get their total resistance, we just add the three together, and that gives us 300 ohms. Now, if we applied 12 volts across these three resistors, we would use Ohm's law to find out that current equals voltage divided by resistance, or 12 divided by 300 is 0.04 amps, and that's 40 milliamps. Current is the same at all points within a series circuit, so we could insert an ammeter anywhere we wanted, and we'd always come up with 40 milliamps. Now let's try it with three different value resistors, 100, 200, and 400. We add those three together, and we've got 700 ohms of total resistance. So 12 volts divided by 700 ohms equals 0.0171 amps, or 17.1 milliamps. We already know that the current in this circuit will be the same no matter where we measure it. What about the voltage, though? We can determine the voltage across each resistor by using the formula volts equal resistance times current. So for the 100-ohm resistor, we've got 1.71 volts. For the 200-ohm resistor, we've got twice that much, 3.43 volts. And for the 400-ohm resistor, we've got twice again, or 6.86 volts. If we added all three of those voltages up, we would find out that it equals our source voltage of 12 volts. This is why series resistors are often referred to as a voltage divider network. Now let's look at parallel resistors, and we'll see that they behave quite differently. For just two resistors in parallel, we can determine the total resistance by multiplying the two resistors by each other and then dividing that number by the value of the two resistors added together. If we have more than two resistors, though, that formula won't work. In this case, we would take the reciprocal of each resistor value, which is 1 divided by the resistor value, and we would add all the values together. Then we would take the reciprocal of that number to get the total resistance. Let's take the three resistors that we were using earlier, a 100, a 200, and a 400, and connect them in parallel. If we measure the voltage in a parallel circuit, we will find that it's the same at all points. Using the formula we specified just a moment ago, we found out that the total resistance of these three in parallel is 57.142 ohms. Now, if we measure the current at each branch in this circuit, we'll find out it's a different story from the series circuit. The current flowing through each resistor will be determined by that resistor's value. Let's look at the 100-ohm resistor. Current equals voltage divided by resistance, so that would be 12 volts divided by 100 ohms would equal 0.12 amps, or 120 milliamps. Now, to find the total current for that circuit, there's a couple of different methods we could use. We could take our 12 volts for the circuit divided by the total resistance of 57.142 ohms, and that would give us 210 milliamps. Or
we could just add up the value of the current for each branch circuit. As long as we're here, we might as well talk about power too, so that you get the right wattage of resistor for your circuit. There's two different formulas, and we can use either one since we already know the voltage, resistance, and current at all stages in this circuit. The first formula, power equals current squared times resistance, and the second formula is power equal current times voltage. We can apply those to each of our three resistor branches there, and we find out that as the value of the resistor goes down, the power goes up. Well, that's about all I have to say about resistors today. You can see that series and parallel circuits act opposite of each other. I hope you've enjoyed this look at the basic resistor component, and in the future, we'll be looking at some other components.
There you go. All you need to know about resistors, or are pretty close to it. I hope you were paying attention there because you could win something. We have a prize from our buddies at cheapham.com that we announced last week we'd be giving away today, and that is this SMT training course from Alenco. And our question was, what was our question? Oh, what is the female compadre to a PL259? You know, the PL259 is a male connector. And we had an answer from Richard, KD6FIE, and he said it's called an SO239. Correct, Richard. And you win the SMT training course here. And thanks for playing along. And next week, we're going to give away another copy of Jerry Buston's great book, Constructing HF Wire Antennas, that I've mentioned many times. But there's every kind of antenna you could want in here. You probably want to look at it right side up, though, when you're reading it, so that you don't come out with an inverted L. But anyway, if you'd like to participate in that, the question is, what is the total resistance from point A to point B? Using these values here, 150 ohms, a 10K ohm, and a 240 ohm, all tied in parallel. What is the total resistance of that circuit? And send your answer to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be next week's winner. And we're looking forward to giving that away. And that's all you got to do. Just do a little calculating there. Send your answer to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com. That's not plural. Contests is that's contest. Well, we've got Cheryl standing in the wings here. But before we get to her, we've got one more video we want to play of our friend Jim Wilson, who's with the Boy Scouts of America. He shows us his ham shack this week. Alex, have you got the video?
Welcome to the K5ND station tour. Starting with the most important part, the antennas. The HF2V is compressed into the side yard with radials running out to the front sidewalk and well into the backyard. It covers 80, 40, and 30 meters and is 32 feet tall. The MA6V off-center-fed vertical dipole is mounted on two 10-foot masts. It works spectacularly on 20, 17, 15, 12, 10, and 6 meters. Here's the ham shack with L-Craft K3 transceiver and P3 pan adapter controlled by the Apple iMac using RumLog. And also a wind keyer and a Bengali Graciella paddle. It's an all CW station. For contest weekends, I put up a two-element Moxon beam for 15 meters. That's the station tour. Thanks for watching.
Nice station there, I would say, wouldn't you, Gordo?
Oh, wow. What a great station and all that Jim does for Boy Scouts of America. We're going to be hearing more from Jim and some of the upcoming programs that he and Gordo's Radio School and ICOM America are putting together for next year's Jamboree. Back to you, George.
That's great, Gordo. Can't wait to hear more about it. I know about the ICOM announcement. I don't know about the Gordo announcement yet, so we're looking forward to that. Cheryl is with us tonight, and Cheryl, I don't know if we're doing chat room or if you have something prepared for Phil Day, but
come in and tell us what's going on in Northern Illinois tonight.
Good evening, everyone, and at Ham Nation. Hi, George. It's nice to see you, and cheers to everybody out there tonight. I have a little bit of some field day information here that everybody might just enjoy. Of course, I'm always safety-oriented. So first up for tonight, I have the kit. If in case you have a problem, this is most important. This is my most important item. I know you'll like some of the others, but you know what this is. This is your safety and your field dressing kit in case somebody gets hurt. You got to bring that. That's a lot of times people need that. They get hurt. You got to, you know, there are anything. If you get hurt, you always got to take care of that first. So I also have a tip from Uncle Frank. If you want to tape some ducks, you definitely need this item here. Everybody needs that. So that's for taping ducks. We also have from a tip from Uncle Frank is this little handy dandy tool. He recommends bringing this along. We have this multi-tool here. And there's lots of little other gadgets that come out of it. I'm not as familiar, but everybody needs a little extra tool here. Now, a lot of times people forget that it can rain. So here's some pants. You know, we got the pants here and, you know, that kind of thing, or possibly a poncho, also a tip from Uncle Frank, that little poncho in case it rains. And, you know, I wanted to mention the things that people forget. They forget your basic items like, you know, a flashlight for you and perhaps another one for your friends. There's on occasion, you may need a flashlight to get in tight spaces. Now, you might think this is a lipstick tube, but it's not. This is the smallest little flashlight I have ever seen in my life. And it has two settings. You know, it's going to destroy the screen here, but if I turn it on back here, look at how bright that is. Everybody would want to have something like that. That's just a nice little item to have. Comes in a little handy-dandy case, and you just twist it to turn it off. So that's something you might want to have. And a lot of people sometimes forget the basic needs of life, which is your smart water as opposed to dumb water. But you can have any kind of thing to hydrate you. That's very critical. Some of the basic things people often forget. Let's say your club or organization runs out of some of the fluids. Make sure you have your own backup supply. Very, very important. So that's what I have for some of the suggestions tonight. But I wanted to move on to some questions from the chat room. So here's the first one from KF5NXR. Goes to George. Where are the instructions to make that gun? Is there any place for someone to look that up, any place, George, that you could point them to?
I don't know where Jim found that, but there are instructions online. I would do a search for potato gun, and you'll probably come up with a million different variations on it.
And one other quick question from Randy N for RMT. He just typed thermite. So my question is, what is thermite and what do you use that for?
Whose question is that?
That was from Randy. Yeah, that'll probably go to you. Yeah, okay.
I don't know that I'm qualified to say what thermite is. I know it's something that you light and it gets really, really hot and will melt through metal and everything around. Don, do you know about thermite?
It's nasty stuff. I do know that. I was thinking it's a high explosive, but it's certainly some type of accelerant. Nothing you really want to play with. I would stay away from thermite. I really would. That's almost the same as like a magnesium fire, and you don't want to fool with that. You can't put those out.
Thank you, Don. Thank you, George. And here's one other question I'd like to pose to is Gordo on here tonight? Are you still with us?
I'm here. In fact,
hey, Julian, how are you?
here's
one for you from Eric Duckman. Aren't HF antennas usually horizontally polarized?
HF antennas can either be vertical or horizontal. The vertical tends to, some folks say, pick up a little bit more noise. You'd think it would be horizontal with power lines. But the dipole antenna allows you to get one apex up nice and high. The vertical antenna, you've got to get everything off the deck and then a good ground plane below it. So either way, once the radio waves, whether they are vertically or horizontally polarized in the electric field, they'll take a roll off the ionosphere. And if you really want to be tricky, you have diversity capabilities, and some of the big ICOM rigs have that capability to monitor both vertical antenna as well as horizontal at the same time. Some of the other rigs have this as well, and that way you never miss a signal coming in that may roll with polarization. So makes no difference, vertical or horizontal. Big deal is get it up in the air.
And another thing about polarization, some antennas are actually circularly polarized. I know some FM broadcast antennas have a circular polarization. And if you see what looks like a long VHF beam that has like a curly coil going around it, that is also like a satellite antenna is circularly polarized as well. Because as he said, the polarization will flip in the ionosphere. So it really doesn't matter.
I've had a couple of gap Titan vertical antennas for HF before. They kind of are multi-band capable, but they don't go down to 80 meters. So then I kind of went with a flat-topped antenna that's horizontal and get out quite well with that, known as the mystery antenna. So you might want to check that out. That's what the strongest part of my station actually is here. And I have one last question from K6PER. How would I know what frequency to call for a specific station entity like Queen, like the Queen Mary or Art Bell? Does anybody want to take that?
Yeah, Gordo, I'll take that. That's a great question, because unless the station has made an announcement exactly where they're going to be, such as we did for Field A, W6WC, think of West Coast, will be at 28,500, you really don't know where that other station is going to be. And I'll tell you what, I'll try and find out where the favorite operating points are for the Queen Mary. And maybe our chat room knows about Art Bell, his hangout on 75 meters. I hear him there every so often, so I know that's a good spot to maybe look for him. But exactly where, chat room will let us know. Back to you, Cheryl.
Point on that, Cheryl. You can check the DX clusters on the internet, and a lot of people will post stations that they've heard on there and what frequency they're on, and you'll often find what you're looking for there. Not every time, but it's a good place to look.
And a
great place to go to find those DX clusters is eham.net. EHAM.net has a really, really good site at the bottom of the page for the DX clusters, and EHAM is just a great resource for everything ham radio related.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thanks, Don. And one last thing. Here is something often imitated, never duplicated, but basically you always need some contest logging software. So one of the most popular ones out there right now is the N1. I don't know if you can see this or not here. N1MM logging software. So check that out. And one thing I can recommend, if you do decide on a certain logging software, and maybe you might want to match it up to the organization or club that you're part of, it's good to use it all year long so you can be proficient in using it. But this is the one that the club that I'm going to for Field Day uses, and that would be the North Shore Radio Club here in Cook County, Illinois. So that's what they recommend, and that's on their website if you want to check that out at ns9rc.org and look at Field Day, and there's a link to that particular software, which is quite popular out there. Other ones are equally good too, I'm sure. But that's all I have for now. And have a great Field Day, and thanks so much for watching Ham Nation, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, Cheryl. Great information. One more logging tip there. Last year we were looking for something cheap or even free, and we ended up using Squirrel, and it's spelled kind of funny, I believe, but we found the Squirrel software made specifically for logging Field Day contacts. That worked out good for us. It's not really network aware, so you've got to do your own workarounds to make that happen. But if you're looking for something cheap, you know, might give it a try. Well, we've had a great time tonight, and glad you could all be with us. Thanks for everyone in the chat room for all the comments and questions. We look forward to seeing everyone again next week. I'm not sure if Bob will be back. Do you know, Gordon?
I don't know, but I'm trying to tune him in right now on the 9100, and I'm hearing stuff out there, but unknown if Bob's going to make it back from his concert tour, George.
Okay. Well, maybe he will, and I'm sure he'll be letting us know something during the week as to whether or not he'll join us next week. If not, you'll get to look at our ugly mugs again. So, anyway, before we go, let me just mention the nets real quick. On HF 40 meters, we've got a net on 7.268 megahertz. On 20 meters, it's 14.268 megahertz. For Echolink, it's star, do drop in star, or node number 355-800. And on D-Star, it's reflector 14, module C. Or if you don't have a D-Star radio, you can listen at wx4adx.com/listen. Thanks for being here, and we'll catch everyone again next week.
73. Great job, George. Now, George, turn around and dial your radio. You're on 238. You need 268. Grab that dial. Turn it up, George.
Good.
See, you're never going to hear anything.
There he goes. Now he's rolling.
I don't guess it'll matter since there's no antenna hooked up on this one.
73, everyone. Have a safe field day.
And good night from South Mississippi and NBA playoffs. Go Thunder.
Show net on 7268. Stand by for net.